Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
This is Penn Jillette on the Free FM, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Here with Michael Goudeau. You know, Goudeau, we have now had on of the Aristocrats. We have now had on Lisa Lampanelli, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, and now we have David Brenner. We're collecting
it's
all
the
Aristocrats here.
You
so
should.
We're trying to get them all on the air, including
one of
the one that's dead.
One of the best films ever done. I'm serious. It was.
So
when we shot it, I thought it was like a funny idea, right?
Yeah.
And I was saying before, we shot it, and I wanted to do it in a desert, and this was a desert. Now it's all houses. It's Vegas. It's all houses. And I remember thinking, what a great idea. And then I just thought it died out, and you did a few people.
It really was. I thought it was an okay idea, and then Provenza editing it. And when you get, 103 of the funniest people in the world, and you have 170 hours of footage, it's going to end up being great.
It was great.
Well, and the basic premise we started with was it was comparing it to jazz, that improvisation, everybody had their own style, and we tried to catch those moments, those, 5-second moments that just define, that one moment of Smothers Brothers. Tommy has that one look, and you go, okay, that's that. And it's really amazing. Like, you hear one note of, Miles Davis.
You got it.
Same thing with the comics. It was just great.
And then when we went, and Ty and I went to see the premiere here at the Palm, And I thought, I really thought the idea was great. Mm-hmm. And then didn't hear anything about it. Then I thought you wrote me a joke. When you said that, it was in the festival, I start laughing. I thought, this is one of the best things Penn's ever done because he's playing it, I swear to you, he's playing it so straight that, it's like, it's brilliant. It's like, it would be like the Constitution of the United States and it ends up with a good punchline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you realize you got sucked in for the whole Constitution.
Yeah. I think we're realizing that right now.
No, it's all punchlines and one serious line at the end. When we the people is the first laugh. That's the first. So I laughed, and then I thought, God, it's so serious. And then there was a follow up, and then I realized you really meant it.
Yeah.
And I read it at some trade or something. I thought, I don't believe this. And then when I went to see it, when we went to the premiere, it was better than it was in my mind's eye.
Oh, good. Well, you can't say better than that.
Yeah, really. And I thought it was great. I could just imagine what people were going to do.
Well, George Carlin gave me the best compliment. He said, at least you didn't screw it up.
Yeah, right.
Because when I told him the idea, he said, when I first called George and asked him to do it, he said to me, this is a really good idea, but it's too good an idea for you to get. You're not really smart enough. Wish someone else had gotten the idea, because you'll probably screw it up.
Isn't that great? That's great.
So you saw the movie and said you didn't screw it up.
Yeah,
so we were very happy.
Actually, we sat with him, right, Ty? We sat with him watching the thing. He loved it. You could tell. He loved it.
He seemed to. You living in Vegas full time?
Yeah. I've been here 5 years.
Just bouncing around when people get sick, you go in.
Yeah, well, that's my new thing now. I'm filling in. Yeah, right now, I'm at the Excalibur. I never played it before, the men that Down Under, the Thunder from Down Under.
Oh, yeah.
I
never thought Thunder from Down Under was a sexy name.
No, but it rhymes.
Yeah.
It doesn't. They don't think sexy. They go, come on, Down Under. And they try different things.
Yeah.
Blunder. Down Under, Blunder. They were working. And then somebody said, how about Thunder? Well, Down Under Thunder.
How about a bad poetic feeling?
Down Under Thunder. Well, and then some guy was cleaning up in the office, and he said, what about Thunder from Down Under? So they looked at the guy, the janitor, and they didn't say anything because they didn't want to pay him. That was the origin of that. So I'm filling in for Louis Anderson. He had a little minor operation, and he's out for a few weeks. So the first thing I said, the filling was July, and with July, August, rough times here.
Sure.
117 in the shade and all that, you know what I mean? So I said, why couldn't he get the operation in February? I'm trying to postpone it.
Sure.
Why can't he wait? How bad can it get? How much poison will he take from now? Think about it.
Sure.
It's a slow leak. It's a certain leak of poison in his system. And it's,
well, that's more of your philosophy. Yeah. What's in it for David Brenner?
What have
you done for me?
Oh, I care about his colon? What has his colon ever done for me?
Exactly.
It isn't like, you know why I'm here tonight to see you? I read about Louis Anderson's colon. And just the idea that you knew him made me come here. I mean, so I thought, look, the colon's very long, as I understand.
Sure, especially Louis.
Yeah, and Louis must, wrap around Detroit. And I thought, well,
what he's doing. He's getting Detroit removed.
Yeah, right. He is Detroit. But what he's doing, I thought, if he has a colon, that, let's say it's like right now it's leaking poison in a foot and a half or colon.
Yeah.
How much difference is it to 2.5 feet?
Right,
there's a lot of colon.
For David Brenner to be in the cooler.
So why doesn't he wait and say, listen, I want you to fill in for me. I'm going to have to, when do you think I should have the operation? I said, during the height of the season. for both Vegas and colon operations.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Colon operations are more effective in February and March.
Sure.
Because of the cold and everything. There's something about that. But he didn't buy that. So he goes off and he leaves me. So now I got caught onto something. And I got to tell you, I involved you in it because I did a radio show and I said that I'm going to be a fill-in. But you can't wait around. A lot of people don't get sick. I don't know when's the last time you got sick. You're a very healthy-looking guy.
I'm fairly healthy.
Yeah. So I figured, and
I've never missed a show, ever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I've had lunch with you and you're a healthy, you're a healthy guy. But I thought, if I just, maybe I'll go to lunch with you again and start in with, I notice you're like a little dark under the eyes.
You need a rest.
Yeah, no, yeah, and really start to talk, and you guys ought to take a break. I mean, really. And the next thing, I'm there at the Rio.
Sure.
So I'm going
to the Pennatella Theater.
Yeah.
Featuring
exactly.
David Brenner.
Yeah.
So Brenner and Teller.
Yeah, right. Don't tell her. I'm thinking of doing it. This could be a whole thing now. I could work in Vegas forever.
You'd fill in for Roy. He had that bad accident.
What a long gig that would have been.
Exactly.
I'd still be working.
Siegfried and
David. And Dave. Oh, yeah, Dave. For a circus, you can't have David. No, it's not right. Or Davey. Siegfried and Davey and the magical tiger.
You'd be like a shark cage on stage.
Stuffed. Whatever I want. I'll work with the animals if they're stuffed.
Yes.
They can look as vicious as they can. You know what I mean? But they got to be stuffed.
Sure.
And we'll make believe they're not. I'll make the moves. I'll fall down. I'll scream. You know what I mean? I'll rip my own shirt. So I could have a career. I'm working on that because I had the long gigs and it's enough. It was enough. It was the long gigs got to me.
What was the best gig you had? What was your favorite show doing?
Favorite place I ever worked was the old Golden Nugget when it was
really?
Yeah, it was Steve Wynn owned it. He had just opened it. It was Dolly Parton got her 6 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra got his.
Oof.
I got mine. So look at the company I had.
That's not bad.
And Steve Wynn was like the mob was. He first of all, he shook your hand on the deal, and he didn't have to give you a piece of paper.
Right.
And then he honored everything he said. He knew everybody's first name. He treated, what do you need? What do you want? I'll tell you a great story. You want to hear a great story?
Yeah. All right. That's a good idea. This show, we should have great stories.
It's a great story. It isn't mine. It's actually Mark Twain's, but don't say anything.
Okay.
Right? He'll never know.
Even he knows, what's he going to do about it?
Okay. At this point, the reports of his death have not been exaggerated.
Yeah, that's right.
Not at all. He's dead.
And he's not coming back with Halley's Comet this time or the next time. Because, he was born on Halley's Comet. Did you notice? He was born on Halley's Comet, and he died. He knew when he was going to die. He says, I'm going to die when Halley's Comet crosses the sky. And he did. He died when 75 years later.
He stopped eating.
Yeah. He stopped. All right. Now, so what story was I going to tell you?
He knew the story about Steve Wynn.
Oh, okay. Steve Wynn.
When you were out west on the railway, I think.
Oh, yeah. And then Tom Sawyer. Oh, no, I don't want to know. Some people can identify him with Mark Twain. Okay. All right. So I come in for the fights, the boxing match. I'm living in New York. I come in with a pal of mine. And he says, let's go downtown. I never saw downtown. I said, oh, you don't want to go. That time, this is, in the early, in the 70s sometime. It was 82 or something. I said, you don't want to go downtown. Forget downtown. No, I never saw downtown. I want to see downtown. I said, well, you can see homeless people in New York. You don't have to come here to see it. You know what I mean? Downtown. Sure. So, all right, we'll go down. So we go downtown, and I walk into the little showroom he had there. Steve Wynn on the first floor. And then the maitre d', I knew the maitre d' from other hotels. He says, do you ever meet Steve Wynn? I said, no. Now, he had Paul Anka call me. Everyone called me to work this Golden Nugget.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not going to downtown. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, go say hello to him. So I go up, and I introduce myself and my friend, and he says, sit down, have a drink. Okay. He said, how come you won't work my joint? I said, well, to be honest with you, your showroom is the problem. You know, not so much downtown. I'm not a downtown actor. But your showroom. He said, what's wrong with my showroom? I said, well, it's all glass. People are sitting there playing slot machines, and they can see. I don't want to worry about some woman getting upset she didn't get three watermelons when I'm on stage.
Sure.
You know, and she's looking at me. He said, well, suppose I put a black curtain when the show starts all the way around and cover all the glass. Would that do it? I said, yeah, that would do it. He said, what else is wrong with my room? I said, well, the other thing is you got to walk through the audience to get to the stage. I don't leave the stage unless the audience is on fire. I don't want to be near them. You know, that's the kind of act I am. I don't want to talk to them. I don't care where they're from. I don't give a damn what job they have. I don't want to know them. I make them laugh. That's enough for me. Okay. So I said, well, I don't want to walk through the audience. He says, all right, how about if I bust the door in the back there? I can bust the door to the swimming pool because it's right next to the swimming pool. And then I'll bust the door from the swimming pool coming in so you could go out in the back and then enter right there at the stage, next to the stage, and walk up a few steps. Would that solve the problem? I said, yeah, sure. He said, what else is wrong with my room? I said, you know, you don't have a dressing room, I understand. And I don't want to change in my room and get in the elevator. People are coming to see my show, and I'm standing there. And those days, we wore tuxedos. I'm in a tux. And they're, oh, yeah, we're coming to your show. Are you going to be funny tonight? You know, all that crap. So they always do that. You're going to be funny? No, I'm not. I have a lot of pain, and I don't think I'll be funny. That's what I tell them. You know, my nose was bleeding right before I got on the elevator. By the way, so I said, I don't want to. So he said, well, he says, I don't have room backstage to build a dressing room. He said, but I'll tell you what. He says, I got a space on the second floor. Suppose I build a dressing room for you, a nice dressing room for you, bathroom, shower, little change room, reception, you know. So would that change it? I said, yeah, that would change it. He said, all right, do we have a deal? Anything else wrong with the room? I said, no. He said, do we have a deal? I said, well, what about money? He says, I'll talk to your manager about money, your agent about money. He said, I want to know if we have a deal. And I said, okay, we have a deal. And he put out his hand. I shook his hand. Now, he books me for about 2 months later. I come in, black curtain, velvet curtain, a door busted out. You can come in through the swimming pool. And a very nice dressing room, beautiful little dressing room. Now, years go by. I had lunch with him a couple months ago. I said, let me ask you a question, because one time when I worked it again, you know, before, and then he sold it, and it was the end of it.
Sure.
When I went in to save it, they were going to make a buffet out of it a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So I said, I heard that you built that showroom for Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. I said, is that true, Steve? He said, well, let me clarify this. I said, because if you did, it's even a better story.
Yeah.
That you conned me. He said, well, here's the story. I did not have a dressing room. Frank Sinatra used to change in the freight elevator. And
wow.
he used to complain, you know, with the hanger, he's getting his tuxedo on the freight elevator. He complained, but he never put in my head to build a dressing room. When I met you, you gave me the idea, you know what? I should build a dressing room. And I thought of the place up on the second floor. So in a way, Frank thinks he thought it was for him, and you thought it was for you, but you're actually, it's a combination, but you're the one that gave me the dressing room. I said, that's a great story. That's perfect.
Did you ever meet Sinatra?
I worked with him once.
What was that like?
Well, what happened, I got a call. I had just done a tour, and I did a lot of television in L.A., and I went back to New York, and I had another tour back in New York, and I get a call. My mother was legally blind, so I would do anything for any organizations like that. So they had Fight for Sight was having a big benefit in San Carlos, I think it was, outside of San Francisco somewhere. And they said, they want you to come out. I said, I looked at my calendar. I said, oh, man, I got a gig in New York. Now you want me to fly out to L.A., then I have another thing. I got to get back to New York. It breaks it up. Then I got to go out to L.A. for television. I said, so instead of just going once each way, I'm doing four flights. No, I'm sorry. I can't. And she said, well, and mentioned the money was short. I said, I don't care about the money. It's just up and back and all that. She said, oh, all right. She said, it would have just been you and Frank. So I'm thinking, is it Gorshin? or did I hit the mother load? I said, Sinatra? She said, yeah. Now, I've always loved him.
Sure.
Oh, my God.
You had to.
Oh. So I said, I'll do it. So now I fly out. I can't wait to meet Frank Sinatra, right? I can't wait. I'm in the dressing room, and there's a knock on the door. And, you know, come in, and I'm with my manager, and come in. Door opens. You can't see the light from behind the guy. He fills the entire doorway, no neck, you know, his nose is touching his ear. You know, he comes in, he goes, you don't walk out in the hall. You don't look out in the hall. You don't put your foot out in the hall. You don't let your eyeball come out of your head and look down the hall. When Frank's in the building, you stay out of the hall. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Wow.
So I'm going to say no. I said, yeah, I understand. All right, fine, fine. So he leaves. So I said to Steve, my manager, I said, oh, this is great. I fly all the way out here. I want to meet Frank Sinatra. I'm such a fan. You know, just to,
sure.
Just to talk to him a minute. And we had something in common, the same dentist in New York. And that's my
that's
in.
Enough. That's enough.
Come
sure.
on. Come on. Penn.
Sure. That's a lot.
Anybody. Sure. I have your dentist. Oh, come on in. Have a dinner. It's a nacho.
Sure.
It's a nacho.
Of course,
it's a nacho
course.
Lead.
I'll do anything for you.
Yeah.
Oh,
of course. You know. So I that would be my lead. I know Murray, the dentist. Okay. So now, so that's it. I said, I can't believe it. So then I'll do my show. And then I leave or go in the back and watch. You know, oh, this is great. This is great. So I change and another knock on the door. Oh, here comes the Goomba again, you know. So I scream this time, come in, come in. Door opens. Hi, David. Francis Sinatra. He comes over. He says, I'm very sorry I'm late. He said, I got stuck in traffic a little bit. He says, I'm really sorry. He said, and I had finished my show. I had done the show and I changed. I'm ready to leave. And I said, I know Murray the dentist. I have the same stupid, right? That's not the time to start talking about the dentist. Oh, Murray, one of my best friends. And he goes on and on. And he's talking. And he says, how is it out there? I said, well, Frank, I never sweat on stage, but I was warm. And I said, it's hot. It's hot on the stage. I don't know why. The lights, whatever it is. He said, okay. I said, look, Frank, do you mind? I said, I'm a much major fan, okay? Do you mind if I watch you from the wings?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know who wants to sit in the old
sure.
on the wings? He said, I would love you to be there, David.
There you
and
go.
And thank you so much for working with me, he said. I mean, the nicest guy. And I stood in the wings. I watched Sinatra. And he was still in voice. And he was still together, you know. And he came off and with towels and he wiped himself. He said, you're right. It's so effing hot out there, he said. Thanks for telling me. Damn, he said. He wipes his tongue. And he goes back out and he does his couple encores. And that's how I met him. And, you know, I played cards after he passed away at his house in Malibu. I was in a card game there. And his wife took me around. And she said, you know what Frank used to do? She said, you were his favorite. He used to take the TV guide, and he would read it and circle every show you were on and make sure he would see you.
Well, you can't do better than that, can you?
Yeah, I didn't even have to mention Murray the Dentist.
You just knew David Brenner. That
yeah,
was the
I could have
part.
Said. I could have said. You know, Murray the Dentist knows me.
Well, people that I know that knew Sinatra well said that Sinatra offstage was identical to Sinatra onstage, except for the F word,
yeah.
which was every third word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he's a street guy.
Sure,
but he you know, he ran hot and cold. He was once sitting in Jilly's in New York, and there was a guy at the bar gawking him. Just keep looking. Kept looking at him, staring at him, staring. He's trying to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So Frank he has one of his blow-ups, and he gets up and he goes over to the bar, and he said, what the hell are you looking at? And he grabs the guy by the throat, and the guy goes, Frank, I'm just your biggest fan. I just love you so much. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. He brushes him off. I didn't mean anything. He says, oh, I didn't realize you were a fan. I'm very sorry. He said, you can watch me. I'm going to have dessert and everything. You can watch me do the whole meal, you know? And he went and he sat down. He ran so many different currents. Right? He had all those different currents. Isn't that great?
We're going to be back with more stories from David Brenner after this. This is Penn Jillette on the Free FM. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette on the Free FM, PennRadio.com, PennRadio@gmail.com. So with Michael Goudeau and with David Brenner, who was about to tell, when we were in break, about to tell a story about his dad, who was a juggler. And I said, you got two jugglers, Michael Goudeau, the juggler of the Lance Burton Show.
Right.
I'm a juggler. So if you want to talk juggling, let's do it on the air.
The most difficult juggling I ever did was getting Ty Babilonia to go out with me.
Yeah.
I want people to know who's sitting here now. All right, now I'll tell you juggling. All right. My father was a song and dance man comedian in vaudeville. He went into vaudeville when he was 9 years old. He used to play the Keith Circuit on the East Coast and all that. And I was a late-in-life child, so by the time I was born, he was out of the business completely. And he got out as a young man. So anyway, he could juggle. He could do all kinds. You know, those vaudevillians, they did a lot of different things. They did a lot of things.
Yeah.
So he used to walk down the steps in our row house in Philadelphia when I had friends in the living room talking. And he would come. You'd hear him coming down the steps. We didn't have rugs. You'd hear him coming down the steps. We didn't have rugs. Yeah. He would say, we have a show business house. He said, you look over there. You can see the whole show. And it was a hole in the floor. You know what I mean? That kind of.
Sure.
So he's coming down the steps, and he would have a glass, a little saucer. He'd have a fork, a baseball. He'd have a screwdriver, whatever it is. And he would come down the steps juggling these objects. And he'd come down, hey, boys, what's happening? What are you doing? What do you got? He calls us gangsters. What are gangsters doing today? You're going to get in trouble? And he'd juggle down the living room, into the dining room, and into the kitchen, and he'd disappear. But he could really, he could juggle. He at a table, whatever was there, he'd pick it up, and he could juggle.
Did he also tell you jokes all the time?
Yeah, well, he had an act. Here's how he opened his show. Now, this is back 1917, 18, something like that, whatever it is. Milton Berle remembers him. Here's how he'd open his show. He had a partner for a while called Buster. So this is when he used his real name. It was Murphy was his stage name because Jewish guys had a tough time. They all changed their name in those days. But then he went with Brenner, which doesn't sound that Jewish. So it was Brenner and Buster. So here was the marquee.
What was the original name?
He went under Murphy, Lou Murphy.
Right, but I mean, was Brenner not his real name?
No, that's his real name. Okay. So then he goes to his real name. So it was Brenner and here's the marquee. Brenner and Buster. Listen to the two bees buzz.
There you go.
Whoa.
Sure.
That brings in the crowd.
Yeah.
And so then Buster was a very dignified, handsome guy, you know, and he would wear a tuxedo, and he would MC shows. He would MC part of the vaudeville show. It was at 12, 15 acts, whatever they had. So then he would say, before I introduce the next act, he said, a woman in the audience lost her pocketbook. And it's a black pocketbook. With a black handle, and it has $200 in it. Now, go back to that time.
Yeah, sure.
That's like saying, you know, it's $5,000. It has $200 in it, and she's offering a $5 reward. If anybody finds it in the theater, please come backstage and she'll give you the $5 reward. All right, my next act, and my father would be in the audience. He'd yell out, I'll give $10 for the purse. And he'd say, excuse me, sir. He said, we're going on with the show. The next act, all right, 15. 15 for that purse. And you don't have to go backstage. I'm right here. And then he raised it to 20. And while he's introducing, he'd yell out another, $30, my limit for the purse. And then Buster would say, what kind of a man are you? What kind of a person are you? Stand up. And my father says, get up here. And he'd get up there, and then the act would start.
Oh, that's cool.
And that would work even today, right?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He started out as a heckler.
Yeah, he started out, and then he did the, all that.
Now, did he commit to it? Did he sit for the whole show before he came on?
Yeah.
He did not.
No, he would sit there, and he'd watch all the acts, and then he'd go up, and you know, and then he'd start with the guy. And his whole theme, and if you put this in front of a lot of my stuff, even though I do current events and everything, his handle, they all had handles in those. Remember, they had a handle that they all worked, the cheapest guy, whatever it was.
Sure.
His handle was, I like to catch the guy. Yeah, and then you can do it today. I like to catch a guy in the government who said the weapons of mass destruction. You know what I mean?
Never had a dinner.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I like to catch the guy who told Clinton to say he doesn't inhale. I like to catch and then he'd do a bit.
Sure.
And no, I like to catch a guy who says get married. He'd have all that. I like to catch a guy.
Did you ever use that ever on stage once? Just as
no,
tribute?
Because I actually. Yeah, I had him on stage with me quite a few times. He lived long enough. He died at 92. He lived long enough to share the stage. And I had him on Douglas, and they had a vaudeville day. And they had all the vaudevillians they could get.
Oh, that's great.
And they did a lot of my father's jokes. Like, one of them was, he's running down the street, and his partner goes, what's the matter? What's the matter, Lou? He says, oh, my mother-in-law, she ate some cucumbers, and she's real sick. I think she's dying. He goes, oh, you're going for the doctor? He says, no, I'm going for more cucumbers. Da, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. Da, 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 da. You know, that corny stuff.
Sure, it's great.
But they know. And I saw Buster. He tracked down Buster when I was a kid. When I was a teenager. And I actually, we went to visit him in Florida. And I actually saw them do the act in the living room.
Oh, come on. That's
honestly,
great.
Honestly, it was fabulous for me.
That is great.
And that's where I got it. That's the genetic gift I got, you know, sure. Which my middle son has.
But well, you didn't start out as a comedian, though.
No, writer, producer, director.
You started fairly late, yeah.
Yeah, writer, producer, director of documentaries. Very, very funny business. Yeah. Let's do poverty or rape this week, you know? Yeah. I don't know. What'll get more laughs? Robbery. Like, robbery got to come in windows. It's funnier.
Sure.
Yeah, it's funnier.
Much funnier.
So that's what I did. Yeah, I started a little late, but I didn't want to do it, Penn. I was just a goof. I took a year off from documentaries. I got burnt out. Nothing was changing. I thought I'd change the world, naivete, you know? And I got burnt out, and I thought, what can I do? I had $9,000. I had 12. I put 3 in the market. I had 9 and right after that. And I thought, you know what? I've always been funny. I was a class comedian, a neighborhood comedian. I was always the funniest guy. So, and I used to go to see comedians, and I think I could do that. So I did it. And as a lark. And then I did the Tonight Show just to, so I could prove to people that I was a comedian once.
Uh-huh.
When they don't believe me, oh, yeah, sure. And you say, oh, yeah, you take the tape, you put
sure,
it in,
sure.
Dun, 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 and there I was. But never knowing that one shot on the Tonight Show and I had a career.
Yeah, the Tonight Show at that time.
A monster.
It changed lives.
13 million viewers, only three networks. This is 1971.
Yeah.
Three networks. Everyone was and everyone who was important was watching Johnny.
Yeah.
Buddy Hackett saw me, my first appearance, and got me into Vegas.
Now, who are you most? I mean, you've met everybody.
Just about,
I know, you've met more people than anyone I know. Who are you most excited about?
Well, you know, there was Richard Conte was an actor in B movies.
Yeah.
I loved Richard Conte. You know, I was like, when I was a kid, Richard Conte in one movie died on the steps of a church in Philadelphia in the uh-huh. rain.
Yeah.
And whenever we used to get downtown, we'd say, Richard Conte died on those steps. You know? I mean, I love Richard Conte. I'm having lunch. I was having lunch with Buddy Hackett, Sonny Bono, and Jack Lemmon, I think it was. Now, I'm having lunch with him outdoors in Beverly Hills. And, you know, it's nice. Buddy Hackett, he's great. Oh, Jack Lemmon, come on. Wonderful. You know, Sonny Bono, I work with him. Sonny's a lot of fun. And I know we're having lunch and we're talking about this and that. And that. I look up the street. Old guy's coming down the street. I go, wait a minute. That's Richard Conte. Now, I'm sitting with, you know what I mean, superstars.
Sure.
I said, he's my favorite. I got to say something. I don't know. I got to say something. You know, and I don't know what to say. And he's coming. And I go, and he says, David Brenner, I love you, man. And we start talking. And I said, well, you know the guys, you know. No, I had to introduce
sure,
her.
Sure.
So that was a thrill. And then I think John Wayne, I came in to do the Douglas show. And I come in last minute.
Yeah.
And he was taping here at the Hilton, one of the hotels. Yeah. And I come into the green room, get some water, you know. And I hear behind me. No one is in there. And I hear behind me. It's about time you got here, David. They're looking for you. So I thought it's, you know, one of the impressionists, you know, one of the 2,000 impressionists who live here.
Yeah.
So I turned around to give him some lip, and there he is, sitting on the sofa. And I went up to him and I said, Duke, I got to tell you something.
Duke,
right away, I jumped.
Sure,
we have
the same dentist, you know Murray?
Yeah, Murray, the dentist. He says, Frank's dentist?
Yeah.
So now we shake hands. I said, I got to tell you something. When I was a little kid, I wanted to grow up and be a gunfighter because of your movies. I said, which is really stupid. First of all, I lived in Philadelphia. Second of all, I'm a Jew. And there weren't a lot of Jewish gunfighters, you know?
Sure.
I said, but I want to thank you for that dream. And I shook his hand. And that was, I wanted to be. That's why all my kids are named after cowboys. I was a cowboy freak as a kid.
Wow.
So that was a thrill meeting. And Jack Benny was another thrill meeting him.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
He was great. Oh,
you sketched with him and stuff, didn't you?
No, I worked with George Burns.
Uh-huh.
And that was another great. Oh, he was a sweetheart. God, he was a sweetheart.
Yeah, I saw him live once or twice, I never got to meet him, of course.
Yeah, I met him after he did it with Bob Hope at the Madison Square Garden. I went backstage and I used to hang with George, and he was just a, you know, he was like, he's just a delightful old guy, you know, funny, and he loved the business. I never did. I was in it for the money, you know. He just loved the business. I mean, if I don't get paid, well, how much is it? You know what I mean? That's right. I'm not. You doctors get paid. I can't go to a doctor and say, you know, do a benefit, take out my appendix. You know. Right? So what right do they have of having? You know, we need a comedian. You know, a doctor's convention. Well, let's get David Brenner, who worked for nothing. What do you mean? What are you talking about? So Burns. Oh, Burns. He was just a, you know, he was just a delight. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Elvis?
No, but I'll tell you something interesting.
You didn't meet Elvis?
No, but I was in a hotel working here, and they called me and they said, "There's Elvis's right hand guy is downstairs, and we know him. It is Elvis's guy, and he has something to give you." So I said, "I sent him up." So he came up and he said, "Elvis sent me over. He's a big fan of yours. He loves you, and he wants you to have this." And he gave me the lightning bolt with a TCB.
Yeah, take care of business. Yeah.
I thanked him very much. I had seen Elvis, but I never met him. And I, you know, I liked him and everything.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And years later, Tal, you'll live through this story. My girlfriend, and my fiance, actually.
Yeah,
and,
sitting next to you, like Yoko Ono.
Yeah, right. Oh, she's great.
Yeah. I'm
well, anyway, what happened is that I was dating someone, an Italian girl from Brooklyn. Now, that's the last person you think would be a fan of Presley.
And you gave it to someone else.
So she said she was a big Presley
fan.
Hit him.
I did.
Oh, man. So I said, wait a minute, I got
some. You gave it to someone else. How long were you with her?
It wasn't that. I mean, what am I going to do with it? I don't know.
Were you sexually involved with her?
Well, I'm not going to say that in front of Ty.
What the hell did she do?
I never had sex.
What the hell did she do?
She was a fan of Presley's. That's enough.
And you gave her? I'm a fan of Presley's. Well, could've saved it for me.
And then I'd meet her, and she said, why'd you give it to Penn? What the hell did you do? Did you sleep with Penn? Are you sleeping with Penn, Gillette?
So you gave it away?
Yeah, I gave it away.
Don't you know what it's worth and what it means? Do you have any idea?
Well, it meant a lot to her.
Oh, I hope you got enough for it.
I didn't think about it.
You should be able to call her up right now to service you.
Really?
Because forever she should owe you.
Is that what it meant, taking care of business?
Yeah, exactly. It's take care of Brenner.
Yeah.
Forever.
Oh, yeah. It was a little lightning bolt, a gold lightning bolt.
It's a little lightning bolt from Elvis goddamn Presley.
Right.
That's what it's from.
And handed. He had fingerprints on it because he handed it to the guy and put it in a little light box.
What do you mean Elvis's guy? You don't mean Colonel Parker.
No, it wasn't that. It was a guy, one of his
One of the Memphis Mafia.
Yeah, one of the Memphis Mafia guys.
Red.
And you gave it away.
I gave it away.
Red gave it to you. You gave it away.
Yeah, and I gave it away. Years later.
Leave him. Do not marry this man.
Wait a minute. I also have something to admit. May I say this? I still have a little disc from Frankie Valli, gold disc.
No.
All right, I still have another thing from Sonny and Cher that they gave me.
The
only choice possible do you have something that belonged to all four of the Beatles and has their DNA on it?
I was a friend of John Lennon's.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you got from John Lennon? The white suit he wore on the cover of Abbey Road?
The
white grand piano? What do you got? What are you going to get out of him?
Can I tell you?
No, you can't tell me until I yell at you a little more. Right. You're an idiot. You're a retard. You're a fool.
All right. But I have from the Beatles, I have four pair of shoes.
From each one of the Beatles? One from each pair?
Yep.
Tell us about that.
It's a lie.
Okay. We'll be back with more lies from David Brenner. This is Ben Gillette with Mike Godot on The Free FM. Yeah, this is Ben Gillette here with Mike Godot. We're talking to David Brenner and his fiance sitting next to him like Yoko Ono. During the recording sessions of Let It Be, where she's sitting, she's even wearing white like she should be.
Nice.
Yeah, she's very nice.
She's very nice.
Yeah. Ty's very nice.
She smells really good.
I just want to ask you questions about your interactions with people. Ever meet Bob Dylan?
Right.
Now, that's the top. If you had something from Bob Dylan, that's a higher thing than Elvis.
Well, I'm not going to tell you how I gave away the thing from Bob Dylan.
No, you don't. I had a harmonica he used at Carnegie Hall, but I gave it to some slut on Staten Island. Yeah, good.
In Brooklyn, you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because this woman from Brooklyn used to wear that. She had a harmonica around her neck. She said it was Dylan's. I look at this. We were both sucked in by the same person.
You know that guitar that Pete Townsend played at Woodstock?
Oh, yeah.
I gave that to you. Just get all these stories. Tell us your Bob Dylan story.
All right,
stupid thing to do with Bob Dylan?
This is probably the epitome of stupidity. All right. I was working with Sonny and Cher. We were at the Sahara Hotel. And you know how Vegas was back in those days. Everyone's up all night. No one went to bed before the sun was up. You just didn't do it. And so I was out all night, and I'm walking, and I thought I'd go up to the room. It's time to crash. And as I'm walking by, they had the breakfast. I see Sonny and Cher and Dennis Pregnolato, their manager, and some other people, and Geffen. Mm-hmm. And, he was very friendly with and used to hang out with us, and Geffen. And they're in a booth. And they signal me, come in. They just ordered the food. I said, I could eat. I've been up all night. Oh, go and have something. Sure. So I go in, I sit down, and we're talking. I'm wired now because I've been up all night, so I don't shut up for a second. And everyone's laughing, and we're talking. And I look at this guy. There's a guy eating there. He's been laughing, and he's eating there. And he's got these little dark glasses on. And I look at him, and I said, are you, because everyone's in the business that was sitting there. I said, are you in the business? Are you, I said, let me guess. You're an agent. Now they start laughing. I said, you're an agent. Are you, what are you, with William Morris? You with William Morris? You're an agent or a manager. You can't be a manager because we got, it's an agent. An agent. And William Morris, because that's who we're with William Morris. Yeah. So would you? No, he says, no, I'm not an agent. I said, no, you're not an agent? No. I said, all right. So I start talking again. I'm looking at the guy. Why? I look at him. I go, what is Bob Dylan doing in Vegas? How stupid am I? I mean, really. So he cracked up, and now here's the best part. Everybody had something to do, and he and I were talking, and we walked out to the swimming pool. It was early in the morning, hardly anybody there. Sat down on two of the lounges, spent the next 3 hours talking. And I was such a fan of his. I mean, I love Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan to me are the lyricists of lyricists, in my opinion.
That seems valid.
And the idea that I'm with one of them. And we just talked. And, of course, I played all the clubs he played in the Village. And
sure.
Comedians, when the comedians started to play, the old folk rooms and all that. And he was just, he was a delight. I mean, he was so bright and he was wonderful. What a thrill.
I met Bob Dylan, but I was too busy, passing out and crying. I didn't have a conversation out by the pool.
Right.
No. I remember when I first met Lou Reed,
Oh, I know. Lou's wild, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. When I first met him, he came to our show. We're talking afterwards, and he said a great thing. Lou said, if we're going to hang out and be friends, you need to stop crying.
That's great.
His tears are just rolling. I just couldn't believe. I was, at the time I met Lou Reed, I was president of the Lou Reed fan club.
Oh, my God.
No kidding. Yeah. Were you really?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was a nut. And Lou would call me to get bootleg tapes and stuff because I had everything. Like you said that your father collected all your videos.
Yeah, right. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was that for Lou Reed. I mean, I just had everything for him. He'd say, "Do you have that? Do you have that appearance you did at The Happening?" Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The exploding plastic and everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was just fabulous. But I have you at least lived in a city. You lived in Philadelphia.
Yeah, right.
Where you knew that people were in show business. When I was in, I never met a person who had been on TV until I was on TV.
All right. I never met a person who owned a TV. That's the neighborhood I grew up in. So I had the benefit of knowing stars, but no TVs.
Yeah. Yes.
But I'll tell you another one. I was in, I have the Amsterdam Billiard Club in New York. I'm one of the three partners in the Billiard Club.
Uh-huh.
And so I hang out. When I go to New York, I hang out in the Billiard Club. It's my own pool room,
sure.
And so I was out there one night with this friend of mine, Nick, and he plays a guitar and he thinks of himself as an amateur. He's actually a computer guy, but he thinks of himself that he could have had a future, as a guitar and being in a rock. He had a band for a while.
There aren't that many people in rock and roll and not that many people playing guitar.
Yeah,
so it is.
I mean,
that would have made it big. No competition.
That and the harp.
Yeah.
harp. Rock and roll harpist. They really can walk in and take any job.
Sure.
So anyway, so we're shooting pool like we always do. We're shooting pool and now it's getting to be about 4 o'clock in the morning. And we're going to split. And there are only about maybe 3 or 4 tables occupied. So he has to go to the bathroom. I said, all right, I'll stand here. So I'm standing there, and I look over. It's Eric Clapton, and he's shooting pool. Now I know Eric,
Sure.
And I walk over, and I'm talking to him, and how you doing and all that. My friend Nick, Eric Clapton's beyond anything any human being could ever be.
God.
Beyond. A butcher. Let's say he's a butcher. The neighborhood butcher who's so important.
Yeah.
Keep your fingers out of the meat,
sure.
if he likes you.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm standing and I'm talking to Clapton and Nick comes out of the bathroom and he walks over and there were maybe 30 people in the whole place. That's all 40 people. And he comes over and I said, Nick, I'd like to meet a friend of mine. I said, Eric, this is my friend, Nick Raimondis. Nick, this is Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton! Light bulbs were breaking in the plane. Eric Clapton! And we take pride in being low-key with all the celebrities that have come in our place, Everyone's looking. Oh! And then they go, I'm sorry. And Clapton's gone. He can't stop laughing. A little overreacting for a star,
So, do you know the Stones?
What
did they give you that you gave away to some slut?
No, I knew them from the old Studio 54 days.
Oh, yeah.
And I never gave anything away of the Stones. And I walked in one night, 54, the Stones were there. And this is when Studio 54 was the jumping place, right?
Sure.
And Jagger, and I go up to Jagger, and hey, Dave, and I go, hey, Mick, how you doing, man? Good, hey, wow, yeah, good, doing good. I said, you're having a wonderful time. What a shame you won't remember it.
Yeah.
And it's like Keith Richards, he fell out of the tree. I said Keith Richards fell out of a palm tree while on vacation, and it knocked him conscious. He's now there's a pool player.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
no, Keith is a big pool player.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Rock.
Are you good? Are you a good pool player?
I used to be really good. I used to be really good. When I was a kid, I started hanging out in pool rooms when I was seven. My father was a bookie in the neighborhood. He used to get all the business from that pool room and all. I used to go there. So I was good up until I was about. And then you got to play. You know, it's like anything else. If you don't, like, you know, you take if you play the trumpet, you got to practice every day or else forget about it. If you mm-hmm. want a career.
Sure.
And there isn't a professional trumpet player who doesn't, you know, you lose your licks. You lose the muscle. Yeah. You lose the muscles and everything.
Sure.
So you got to do the same thing with pool. And I don't do that.
You know. But you don't play pool very well. But you heard it's more fun if you play for money.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. My father was the real player and a hustler. And when he was in his 80s, he would go into. He lived in a community down in Florida, and they had pool tables for the people. It's very relaxing. So he would go over there, and he would shuffle. Now he would walk. He ran up steps up until he died.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in great shape, but he would like move real slowly, and he'd go up and amble over to some table, and there was he called me one night. And said the guy was about 40, and he's shooting pool, and I said, "Hey, young man, if you don't want to play alone, would you like to shoot some pool?" I'll shoot some pool with you. You know, we'll make it interesting. Like, you know, what do you play? He said, well, 9 ball. My father said, well, we could make it like maybe $5, $10 a game. He says he knew the guy would right away jump at it. He'd say, yeah. He said, why? He said, I got to go over there. He'd say, rack it up, and I'll be right back, you know. And then he'd go, and he'd come back with his pool stick. And he'd take it out of the case and he'd screw it together. He'd say, well, what do you want to do? You want to shoot for the break or you want to flip a coin? What do you want? And then he'd run like 4 or 5 straight games, you know? And then he'd say, all right, let's make it $25 a game. I'll give you a chance to make your money. And he'd hustle him and he'd tell me how much he made. And he was in his 80s when he did this.
That was his hobby.
Yeah, yeah. He would suck in these young guys.
But he was a bookie, right?
Yeah, he was a bookie. He used to collect a numbers writer. He used to collect
so
the numbers.
He thought that he had to get something more respectable than vaudeville. Is that right, to raise a family?
Well, yeah. You're on the road. You don't have to be on the road when you're a gambler.
Yeah, I guess
you can stay in one place when you're a bookie. But he was also a compulsive gambler. He would gamble on anything. This is a true story. I remember as a kid, and I was with my father, and there were two or three other men, and my father said, I'll bet you that the next person that comes through the door is a beautiful, well-built blonde. And I tugged at my father, and I said, we're in the men's room. We were in the bathroom. Uh-huh. And he, without losing a beat, he said, what odds are you going to give me? True story. What odds are you going to give me? It was great.
Well, this is David Brenner, our 10th aristocrat to be on.
Yes.
One of the really, really funny guys. And we had lunch a while ago, and you just have the best stories all the time.
Well, thanks. And you too.
I know. What's that?
You too.
Thanks.
You know, and I'm waiting for a souvenir because I know a woman who likes you. I know a woman who likes you, and I can give it to her.
Sure.
Something personal, though, like this table.
Maybe my red fingernail polish.
Yeah, something nice.
David Brenner, great aristocrat, here with Mike Goudeau and Penn Jillette. We are on Free FM. That's PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. We'll be back if the creek don't rise.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.